test variables before you put in the racial identity of the subject, you know, dichotomize and say black and white, 0 and 1, that racial identity doesn't add anything at all to the prediction once you put in abilities. The school system, because of their segregated policy, were discriminating against a black kid, and you'd expect them to be doing more poorly in school, the scores would predict.
Right.
And race should then predict scholastic achievement, but independently of IQ.
Right.
And
right.
It didn't one bit. But the next school board that came in was willing to pass a resolution that my report was incompetent and racist.
It seems crazy. It seems absolutely crazy.
Defamation or something.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like they just don't like the results, so they call it incompetent racist.
Yeah.
It just couldn't be more stupid, really.
Right. Yeah, they weren't able to offer any specific criticism, apparently, you know. None came out in what I read in the newspaper. Someone down there sent me clippings about it. If it was incompetent, the test experts from the California Test Bureau weren't able to find anything wrong with it. And the journal that published it didn't find anything wrong with it. And the journal actually solicited commentaries from a number of critics who didn't find anything wrong with the conclusion. So, how the school board of non-experts found it incompetent, I don't know.
Well, do you know if they were, well, in Bakersfield, I don't know, were the people, a lot of them black, or, I mean, who were elected to the school board, or?
I don't know, because I wasn't there to see the school board at that time.
Yeah.
But they weren't when I was doing the study.
Uh-huh.
I had met with the school board, and they weren't black at that time. Now, I think they got some blacks on it, I had heard. Because, of course, this newspaper report didn't spell out the racial composition of the school board at the time they denounced my report. Those are the kinds of things that that happen, and they're just... It's all so political that one wonders what difference the results of educational research make to these people who are running the school.
It seemed like from your statement that, you know, one would conclude that you thought that educational research had zero influence.
Well, here's the way I think it may have some influence, that the research is lying around there, and when the political climate is consistent with particular research findings, those research findings then come into play. And people cite them and base programs on them and follow them up and so on. You see, I think when there were a lot of research findings lying around that were contrary to the whole Head Start notion and compensatory education, so on, and there were other research findings that would support those kinds of things. And those research findings are the ones that were cited and held up as examples and were springboards to other research in the same vein and so on, when the political temper was that we've got to do something to create greater equality of educational opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So the political climate sort of, might say, select or treat research in a very selective way.
It seems kind of crazy to me the way people get these ideas, like, you know, we're going to have busing, okay? I mean, there are many, many other ideas that you could cite that are in the same kind of vein. They get these ideas, like, we're going to have busing, and then they just fund this massive program, cost billions of dollars, and you would think they would set up
one
city and say, okay, let's do this and see what happens, and then if it works well here, then we can try it all over. I mean, anybody, you know, in his normal everyday life isn't going to just make such huge investments of time and money and things that are untried.
Absolutely, right. Well, that's because it's a political thing. No researcher would do it that way. You know, I don't care who he is, what his political persuasion. As a researcher, he wouldn't do it that way.
Well, like you're talking here about, should they legalize all drugs? And, I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't really think that much about it. There are some things to be said for it, but there are a lot of things to be said against it. But I thought, well, maybe they could just try it in one little city and see what happens. But no, they'll never do that. They'll either do it or they won't do it.
That's right.
You know.
Now, what we need much more of, for example, are experimental schools where you take someone's particular or a group of people's particular views of what it takes is going to take to improve the schools,
mm-hmm.
and do it in one experimental school or a set of schools where you have a connected grammar school to junior high and high school.
Yeah.
Working together, and then put a lot of resources into that one school.
Uh-huh.
So it may cost 10 times as much as it would to run an ordinary school. Just as it costs a lot to develop a computer, a new computer or something.
Well, you know, it's like the idea of, you know, of experimentation, the whole frame of mind that you get from engaging in any kind of scientific research is just completely foreign to the vast majority of people.
Oh,
and,
absolutely. Yeah, the vast majority of people have no appreciation of how science works.
And the thing is, like, I mean, if you have an experimental approach to your whole life, I mean, you think, and this may sound trivial, but I mean, women are all the time trying to think how to make themselves look better. Okay, this goes on from age 12 up until the time they die. And if you just think, well, I'll go to the beauty parlor every week and, you know, I'll buy a new dress and do this and that. I mean, you might be able to make yourself look reasonably good. But if you have an experimental approach and you think, well, maybe I'll get some tinted contact lenses. Maybe I'll try this. Maybe I'll try that. And on all the different categories of what to do to make yourself more and more devastatingly attractive, you know, if you experiment, you are much more successful. And, I mean, in any kind of endeavor, trivial like that, or, you know, not so trivial, I think that attitude of assertiveness and, you know, trying to always gather more information and experiment and manipulate and so on, that attitude gets people much farther. And unfortunately, most people are never exposed to that kind of thing. They don't think that way. And I think that's one thing that education could help people a lot on about how to run their lives. I mean, mm-hmm. there have been so many things, like, for example, I have lower back pain. It's not very bad, but, you know, it hurts. So I got a book, you know, that was the best, the most definitive book on what to do about lower back pain. And so then, you know, so far it's been helping me. It's surveyed thousands of people and found out what was most successful for them. Now, if I didn't have this book, I mean, I would go on for 10 or 20 years, you know, and not know what to do. I just try one unsuccessful thing after another. So anyway, it's just, I don't mean to go into a long harangue about this. It's just that people are not exposed to these kinds of ideas, and they would be very helpful to them.
Is there anything more to be said about that question 17? I mean,
no, I don't
sort
think
of
so.
Exhausted myself on that one.
Yeah. Where do we... Why don't we go on to question number 18?
What is my next book going to be about? Well, that's a good question because I've been debating that point myself. I've got at least 3 books in mind that I want to write, and I hope I will write all of them. It's just a matter of your energy holding out and so forth, and so far it is. And I'm not sure what the optimal order for doing them is, and I'm on one of the books, at least. I'm not even sure I want it known what I want to do, because someone may try to stop me.
Oh, okay.
But I'll tell you, I certainly reserve the right to edit out anything that you may say that I think may be to my detriment.
Sure.
Well, the 3 main books I want to write, possibly even a 4th one, but I'm becoming less and less qualified to write the 4th one that I've had in mind for a long time. It would take full-time work get on top of it enough to write a full book on it. But that's a book on the heritability of mental abilities. Thought it would call it something like the inheritance of mental abilities. But don't say anything about that because I may never do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that field is becoming so technical and specialized, there's so much going on in it now that I'd have to rather compact book that pulls all that together. The methodology of the field, the theoretical notions around, and the basic empirical findings, and so on, would be a boon to the field. I thought of this partly because I get so many phone calls from people and so much correspondence, people asking about methodological things, and people who want to do research in this area now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just an amazing amount of activity in this area. Whereas 10 years ago, when I started working in this area, I was almost a loner. And people scoffed at the idea that there would be anything in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so much in it now that it needs to be organized and brought together so that people who want to work in the field don't have to go trudging through all of the scattered literature. They'll have it all the essence of it in one sort of neat kind of like a textbook.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I want to do. It sounds totally unexciting to the layman, but it's very basic to other issues. The whole question of intelligence and to race differences. Now, another book that I want to do is a book on the problem of black intelligence. The reason I want to do that now, even though I've written a good deal on that in the past, is that there's so many new things that have come up and the picture is changing somewhat as a result of reaction time research, both potential research, and theories of intelligence, and what I call Spearman's hypothesis, that is, this finding that the black-white difference is primarily a G difference,
mm-hmm.
and the newly discovered physical correlates of intelligence, and so on. I'm also working on a paper reviewing a lot of these physical correlates, some new ones that have come out since you were interested in that topic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're relevant to, well, like myopia, and the fact that there are racial differences in the expected direction of
mm-hmm.
myopia.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much that can be put together and make such an interesting and strong kind of case that it really puts the whole issue of black and white differences on a different footing. And I want it to be a very rigorous scientific kind of book. I'm not going to get far afield into big, broad social issues and so on, although I'll have a chapter that has a good deal to do with the social consequences of two groups being, in a sense, bimodal with respect to such a socially important trait. And so that's another book. That could be very controversial and may even have trouble finding a publisher, but I'd like to have one of the standard publishers publish it. I don't want to publish it to some little out-of-the-way place. Like one of the major publishers to take it on, as they have done my other book, for distribution purposes and so on. And then the third book that I sort of would like to do is kind of a magnum opus idea, is that I want to do a book on, well, what I call the theory of intelligence. Not theories of intelligence, but the theory of intelligence. And there's no really good book on that. I mean, there are a lot of, textbooks that aren't very sophisticated and so forth on this subject, but I'd like to do a book that would stand for some time as a good, rather advanced level, senior graduate level book, and a book for experts on mental ability, basically. But I think I call it the theory of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Could be just kind of an attractive title. I'd explain it. Preface or introduction of the book that I'm going to get along without the use of the word intelligence as I did in my editorial for the journal Intelligence. But it's a word like nature. I mean, you don't find scientists talking, arguing about nature, theories of nature, and that sort of thing. I put the word intelligence in that same category.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right in the title of the journal, and all right in popular parlance, but I think it's a scientifically rather useless term.
Meaning that it's just too broad, it includes
too
many things.
Too many things to too many people, it's ill-defined, and you don't really need the term. You can talk about abilities and factors.
Mm-hmm.
And got a Ford Foundation grant to do a book on, well, let's see, what's the title of this grant proposal here? Testing and the Politics of Opportunity Allocation. He's commissioned chapters from all kinds of people. Among the psychologists he got chapters from are Robert Sternberg and Howard Gardner and myself. And some other, a couple of other psychometricians probably wouldn't know. So one's going to do, for example, a chapter on the history of the use of tests in the military. Mm-hmm. And I'm basically doing an article on the relationship between G and manifest achievement and what can be done, if anything, to sort of get around G or to ameliorate the bad effects of large differences in G that we find in our population, both individual and group differences. Because mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything to be done to change G. I've told the dean that. You're not going to change people's G except on a biological level, either genetically or by some kind of genetic engineering or other biological means. Mm-hmm. So he knows that I'm taking that stand. But I still think that things can be done societally and in the educational system that will improve the situation we presently see, such as having more different kinds of educational programs for different levels of ability and so on. Mm-hmm. Those are the three main books I'm going to write. I'm debating on whether to do the reaction time book first or the book on black intelligence first.
Well, the book on black intelligence, you would incorporate in that a lot of information about physiological correlates of IQ, and then you would see if they were in the right direction.
And a lot of the reaction time, a lot of the arguments that depend on the reaction time stuff. And what my theory is, it's already coming to roost, is that some people are getting turned off on reaction time research because they think that this may tie in with racial differences. Mm-hmm. And that if you begin, if the reaction time research gets too well accepted and the conclusions from it and so forth become rather scientifically solid, and then it's extrapolated to racial things, if you start doing research with these same reaction time techniques in the racial realm, that it will be strong support for certain views that they might oppose regarding racial differences.
Well, I mean, hasn't anything been done on this so far? In other words, you haven't done anything with reaction time?
And race, no.
Okay, well, I haven't kept up with this for a couple years.
What I've done has been incidental. I mean, it's just been a result of there being minority races in groups that I've had to run in reaction time experiments. I haven't gone out specifically to investigate racial differences in these things.
Right.
But that is, in a sense, next logical step, and some people are beginning to see that that may be, you know, something that won't come out of this. And so they're against, that they're already denouncing findings about reaction time on the grounds that they may show racial differences.
Yeah, that's getting pretty far out.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant by the corruption of it, this network of corruption of science by this racial problem that sticks in our craw, so to speak.
I wonder if this, you know, same method, I guess, of looking at the physiological cause of IQ and then comparing the races, okay. I'm wondering if you could compare generations. I mean, like, if Lynn says that there's this 20-point, gap, you know, or increase, rather, from one generation to the next, I'm wondering whether the physiological correlates, you know, like, the parents would be shorter, not as often myopic, and so on. I'm wondering if it would go in the right direction.
I wrote a paper about that, about the use
Well, I mean, a lot of the data probably would already exist on the easy things like myopia and height. You know, as far as like when they induct people into the army.
We already know about height. I don't know about myopia, but we know about height.
And so I mean, the other thing, like the business of evoked potentials or reaction time, that would be a whole lot of trouble, of course.
Oh, yeah, but one could start gathering data like that, you see, so that in, you know, the next generation, we would have these anchors. Because we can actually examine the degree of relationship between psychometric tests, like the Wechsler and whatever, and the reaction time measures, which are not much influenced by environmental things, unless they're biological environments.
Mm-hmm.
And then these same anchors can be used at any other time in history.
Mm-hmm.
And they're measured on an absolute scale. They don't depend upon any particular population sample. I mean, a reaction time is a time measurement. You can measure the reaction time of people on Mars, or if there were any, you know. And it can be directly compared with people here. It doesn't depend upon any population parameter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting, you know. I mean, that whole business is very interesting to me. I mean, it's inherently interesting, but all the stuff that you can do with it is what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And so I think by writing a book about the reaction time stuff, if it gets a good reception and becomes sort of generally accepted and people aren't turned off from researching this, because it's very important that a lot of other people have gotten into the act, you see, because some of my work is now accepted because other people have replicated and have found the same thing. Even critics who've replicated it have found the same thing. And so it's now generally accepted, a lot of this, you see.
Well, would the book about the reaction time and the, what do you call these things? Electrophysiological call it, I guess?
Right, yeah.
This wouldn't have much, I mean, this wouldn't have anything really about black-white differences.
Oh, no,
and then you would write another book. Right, you would write that to sort of establish that,
establish the credibility of these techniques and of the findings and of the fact that they are related to intelligence and that this is now generally accepted and, you know, there's a large body of research on it and so on.
I was just thinking, I mean, really, the people, your critics have a real hard time, you know. I mean, it's like, it just would be very difficult. I was just thinking, like, if somebody's goal in life was to discredit everything you said, I mean, he or she would have an extremely difficult time, and it's just, oh, I don't know, I mean, it seems like...
I get a certain amount of, secret pleasure, I think, out of trying to give my critics a bad time.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, see, and the way you do this, I mean, it's not only just the research and the way you do it, but I mean, there's the strategy of how you're presenting the reaction time book, and then you come along with this other stuff, and which I think is exactly as it should be, and that, you know, but it just makes life miserable and hopeless for those people who are trying to refute you.
Right, but see, that's why I thought if the book on black-white differences came out first, it might put a damper on further reaction time.
Right, right.
And so on. Other people would get cold feet and would get out of the field
And also, if you, in the reaction time thing, if you give a lot of stuff so that a lot of ideas that kind of generate ideas in other people, and then they think, oh, I think I, you know, stuff so that a lot of people will rush around and they think, I can get a good publishable article about this or this or this question. You know, and then more and more people get involved in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you go through the issues of intelligence, you'll see how many references there are to me and my work in this vein.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a lot of people have gotten into the act, and more are doing, so graduate students doing dissertations in this area. You know that Cayman has gotten an apparatus just like mine and has done a study already?
Huh. Is he trying to...
Oh, yeah, he's trying to discredit me. Of course, he already, he's already talking about the racial aspect of this thing. And, unfortunately, he himself, in his own study, found a correlation between these reaction time measures and intelligence. He's trying to explain them away as some kind of an artifact.
Hmm.
See, I think he thought he wouldn't find anything, but,
money to these people like Lewontin and Hirsch and all these kind of people? I mean, is, I just wonder.
Not for years. I've met all of them.
Uh-huh.
And I've talked with them at times in the distant past.
I just wondered if they were, you know, like if they were capable of having a reasonable conversation, or if they were just so much opposed to what you were doing that they you know, didn't want to even talk about it, or?
Oh, no. The only one of that bunch, again, this is quotable, but who is a kind of a, I don't think of him in the same terms as Jerry Hirsch. I don't know if you know anything about Jerry Hirsch, Illinois.
Now, is he the one who, wrote that great big thick book about inequality? That's somebody else.
Oh, yeah, that's somebody else. Yeah, you're thinking of, Jenks.
Jenks. Right. That's somebody else.
Oh, yeah, he's not human. He was at Harvard then. He's now at University of, Chicago, I think. No, he's a reasonable guy. Christopher Jenks is.
Well, I can't exactly remember. The name Hirsch is very familiar, but
Hirsch.
I can't remember what he's done.
H-I-R-S-C-H, Jerry Hirsch. Yeah, well, I think of him in a different category. He is a kind of a nut. There's no accounting for what and why he does some of the things he does.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people like Stephen Jay Gould and Lewontin and Kamen are very predictable and consistent, and if you were a good Marxist yourself, you'd be doing very much what they're doing. You admire what they do. You'd say, I wish I could do as good a job of being a good Marxist as they are.
Uh-huh.
So they're not crazy people. They're just people with a particular ideology that dictates what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bright and knowledgeable and so on. I mean, Lewontin is, you know, a world-famous geneticist. He's a full professor of genetics at Harvard. He was a member of the National Academy of Sciences, but he quit over some dispute. He's a dissident type. But he's a brilliant kind of person. And Kamen is no fool. I mean, he's a smart guy. But he just has this philosophy. And none of them are Morton Downey type. I mean, I've met all of them socially at, you know, at cocktail parties and things like that, at meetings. And I've been on the platform with both Lewontin and Kamen. And although Kamen, both of them are quite dishonest and underhanded in the way they do things, they do it in a polite way.
Yeah,
you don't have to worry. They're not going to come up and punch you in the nose or call you names or anything like Morton Downey does. You know, Morton Downey slapped some gay who was a guest on his program in the face.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, he slapped this guy. Wanted to sue him, and Downey complained that the guy had gotten in his way.
He might not be on the air for very long, you know. He's going way too far.
Yeah. But, let's see, how did we get onto that? Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, about the reaction time.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, you see, that's what I'm saying. I've kept the race stuff out of it, very much. Except where it would have been sort of unethical not to have broken down my data by race and reported stuff, and in a couple of places I reported blacks and whites, but just as part of the table without any comment.
Mm-hmm.
Just like black junior college students and white junior college students, and I give the statistics on them, so, but no comment. Just breaking it down as the way you would by sex or anything else. And I've made nothing of it. People can see it for themselves. We don't really know what the picture is. We won't know until I am able to do some actually systematic research on this. And I'm hoping I might be able to do it, but it remains to be seen. And the picture may be different than anyone imagines at this point, including myself. I can think of different scenarios. I may do the reaction time book first. It would be easier to do in some ways. On the other hand, I kind of don't black-white differences that I can put together that need to be consolidated in one place for scholarly people who want to see it, for professors of psychology and so on who really want to know what's known here. Not in the sense of Shuey's enormous book or the book done by Osborne and McGirt, which are just sort of compendia of psych abstracts and studies that have tested black and white.
Mm-hmm.
See, they didn't make any effort to make any real sense out of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's useful to have that. It's pretty just an annotated bibliography is all you've got in those books. And I want to go way beyond that. Some kind of a coherent account of what all of this adds up. And I'm, you know, I don't want to push it so far back that there may be some risk that I may never do it. You never know what'll happen to you. I'm in
the age
bracket now where I'm seeing colleagues falling by the wayside, so to speak.
Well, you know, that reminds me. I got a letter from this guy in Sweden, and he's real cute. He's 20 years old, and he believes in eugenics, and he's like very, you know, advanced for his age. But anyway, I wrote back to him and answered all his questions. And then I said, P.S., be sure to wear your seatbelt and don't ride on motorcycles, you know, because he's one of the few very young people I know who believes in eugenics, you know. And so I was thinking, you were saying that your colleagues, you're at the age where your colleagues are, you know, falling by the wayside. I've been hearing on TV and reading in magazines and stuff, that if you take an aspirin a day, that's supposed to be really good for you. And
I do that.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, I take a baby aspirin. You know, that's what I have before. I take a baby aspirin every day. I've been doing that for maybe the last 3 years.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that.
And I do quite a few things that I hope will preserve me long enough to get all the things done I want to do.
Okay.
But then there's the other problem that, you know, I'm getting to the point where my wife wants to do things in the way of travel and so on. Now, I'd like to do them myself, but he says, you know, it's not going to be very long before we'd be too old to want to do some of these things. Because getting around the world and so forth takes a certain amount of energy and good health, and your resistance has to be up, and so on. So you run the risk of, you know, coming down with illnesses and so forth you wouldn't otherwise have gotten by traveling and all of that.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I owe something to her in doing some of those things, and I want to do them myself, but there's that competition between wanting to do the things that people do when they get around retirement age and still wanting to do some of these other books and research and so forth that remain to be done. So I'm going to have to, you know, do both.
Well, how old are you now?
Well, I'll be 65 in August, so...
Yeah, I'll be 40 next month.
I'm a young 65 compared with some neighbors and things around here. By far, I mean, I swim a mile every day at a time of the year up here when the lake is cold enough that nobody else goes in swimming.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, that's great.
And things like that. A lot of people my age don't do, you know, half the things I do. And,
did your parents live for a long time?
Well, you see, I have mixed backgrounds in that way. My father's side of the family have all lived into their just their 60s and 70s. The oldest of my father's family is his younger brother, died at 83. My father is 76.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's side of the family have all gotten up into their late 80s and 90s. And I still have one aunt, my mother's younger sister, who is now 96 and still doing extremely well.
And they were still, I mean, the real thing is, how long can you last while you still can function, you know?
That's right. Well, on my mother's side, they've functioned a long time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they've been enjoying life and doing things, and they retained their brightness and so forth up to a very old age. I mean, this 96-year-old aunt is still like just anybody else we know.
Yeah, that's something.
And,
Well, that looks pretty promising, you know.
Well, that's fairly good, yeah, but you never know. And, you know, there's some people in our department I won't mention any names, but one very brilliant person is really world famous in his field, and they brilliant person who has had some health problems in recent years, and he's just gone way down. I mean, I wonder now if he would make it as a grad student if he had it to do over again. You know?
Yeah, it's really sad when those kind of things happen.
Right, yeah, and he's younger than I am by 4 years. But he's had to take early retirement for health reasons.
I think that swimming every day is really the best kind of exercise. And I think if you can swim a mile every day, I mean, that's just, I believe that's just really good for you. And the fact that you are able to do it means you must be in good shape to begin with. And so...
Oh, yeah, well, I always feel very good. And the other thing is I don't have, some people have good days and bad days and moods or periods when they're sort of depressed and can't get anything done and so on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not that way at all. I may feel a little tired or disgusted by the end of some days because of things that have happened. But I always get up in the morning sort of raring to go and ready to enter the fray again. So it's just, as someone said, I'm just lucky to have good body chemistry.
Yeah, that's really great.
So, going as long as I can on these things. But I do want to take some time out to do some of the things I want to do when traveling around. But whenever I travel, I also do a certain amount of what might be called missionary work. I mean, I lecture at universities. And I've got invitations all over Europe now. And so wherever we go there, I'll be giving lectures every few days at different universities.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that in India. I lectured at, 14 or 15 different universities and institutes in India. I gave something like 40 lectures at some 14 or 15 different universities and institutes all over India. And yet we saw India. I had what I considered a good time, even though it kept me pretty busy doing these other things.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to make it sort of worthwhile. I don't feel I'm wasting my time in those places if I can lectures about the heritability of intelligence and this, that, and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I get plenty of invitations to do it, so as long as I can do that, too, I will. And of course, it helps pay your way around.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, that's about it. I think this book on theories of intelligence I'll write when I'm too old to feel like traveling around and so forth anymore. I don't know, but I'd like to have all of this done in the next 2 years.